But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell. And I'm here this morning with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. What's going on?
Nothing. I'm getting ready for spring. You know, one hint of nice weather, and I'm ready to dust off the golf clubs. And
well, the weather has been pretty nice. I mean, Friday, yeah, it seemed like a spring day.
45 degrees, 50 degrees last few days. So hopefully it'll keep on. There's always Yeah, I'm never really convinced we're out of the woods until the end of April, you know?
You can have a snowstorm in March.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we were lucky we had some nice weather. It's just this damn black snow that really starting to not like.
Yeah, it's nice when it first falls, you know, because you go outside, everything's so quiet and stuff, and then I wish it would just go away. You know, speaking of April and snow in late March, I remember Easter Sunday, 1970.
Yes.
I was going to work, and it was 3 feet of snow, and it was the first time that my boss had ever closed the restaurant at that point, you know?
Yes.
Crazy blizzard.
It was my cousin's bar mitzvah, and it was going to be at Monty's, which I think now is the Rockwell Center Links.
Oh, yeah?
But, yeah, it was a snowstorm.
I know. It was crazy. Easter Sunday. Nuts. Yeah, well, hopefully that won't happen this year.
So, you know, I don't know what happened. I went down to Florida, I guess on the Valentine's Day. And then there was a lot of snow around here and stuff. And I came back, and it was beautiful. Even though there was snow on the ground, it was all pure white and very picturesque.
The rain.
And then the warm weather came this week, and it's messy looking.
Yeah, well, once the rain comes, it just turns it all, you know, it either gets rid of it all or it turns it into a disaster, you know. And again, I don't do anything slippery. You know, I don't ski, I don't skate, you know, any of that stuff. So, you know, for me, winter is just this, oh, can we just get through it, you know? So, P.S., I learned a little bit about myself this week. I haven't been doing much in the last 7 or 8 weeks, you know. Clubs closed, not much going on out east. So I've been kind of sitting on my rear end doing not much of anything. So I'm in the midst of changing some things at Amano. I'm changing menu items, and I'm screwing around with some stuff out there, right? So I went out there the other day, and I worked from, I don't know, I want to say 9 o'clock in the morning till like 6 at night. I was leveled, man. I'm way out of shape. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is like a walk in the park for me normally. An 8-hour day is like a half a day, you know? I'm like, geez, I got to start training again. I got to get back in the kitchen because
That's an ongoing thing with people. I keep hearing people say that, like, they were working from remote, working remotely.
Yeah.
And now a lot of the companies are having people come back maybe 1 week off the next or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying they're out of shape. You know, they're taking the subway and going up and down the stairs at Penn Station. They don't have it in them anymore.
It's not easy. This work thing gets in the way of everything that you want to do.
It does. It does. Again, as I'm known for my detours, I just have to share a quick story.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm being driven back from the airport, and we're talking about this new restaurant that's in Farmingdale called Mogu Chinese Cuisine,
right,
which has a link to you in this, that the same people that designed the interior designed Jewel with you.
Yeah, the Lago sisters.
So I'm talking to my friend who's involved with Vincent's Clam Bar in Mineola,
mm-hmm,
or Carl Place. And
Bobby?
Well, somebody that's working with them to help them possibly franchise.
Oh, okay.
But yes, Bobby is the principal over there. Yeah. So we're talking about the Mogu, and they have some sort of computerized cooking, and they're doing, I guess, air fry wok preparation. And
air fry wok.
Yes, yeah, but you're gonna laugh your.
I'm laughing
you're
already.
You're gonna fall out of your chair though. So the guy that he goes, hold on a second, and he puts up on YouTube, Stratus Morphogen.
Oh no, that's our buddy Stratus
from Philippe Chow.
Yeah, is he the one?
Because he's got the same thing. He's got some sort of crazy, touchless food
Yeah, I heard delivery he was screwing around with some fast food stuff.
Yeah, it's like going to high school. The lockers open up and the food
like
comes
haunted
out.
Audits. Remember when I do automat years ago? My grandfather used to take me there all the time. I put a nickel in, I get a cherry pie or whatever, a quarter. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah, cool stuff. Yeah, the automat that had a really what's the word I'm looking for? It left a mark on me. The automat. I couldn't wait to get there. And I used to go into the my grandfather lived in Queens, and I would go to Queens with him, and he would take me into the city. I don't remember where it was. I guess somewhere in Midtown or whatever. And, I just couldn't wait to eat there. I just see all that wall of windows with all the possibilities.
Well, the world was so different back then. Even Woolworths was a place to eat. And, you'd go somewhere for the blue plate special because,
yeah.
I guess,
Woolworths had a counter.
Yeah.
We used to go to the one in Roosevelt Field all the time, and they had that banana split special where they had all the balloons hanging over the counter, and you picked a balloon and you popped it, and there was a number in there, and that number is what you paid for your banana split.
Wow.
And you're always trying to get one for a penny, obviously, and I think they were $2.95 or whatever, and I used to get $2.93, whatever. It's like one of those, I never got lucky. I was never lucky.
That's like when I play the lotto game, loose change, like I'll get up to like 95 cents, like in the first one.
Sure.
And then the next five are like, zero or a penny.
Yeah.
And I get 99 cents and I lose.
Always. I think the lottery is brilliant in the fact that it's essentially a tax on the poor. if you were a politician, you went, I am going to tax the rear ends off of those poor people, you'd be laughed out of the campaign.
Oh, I get a kick. I go to 7-Eleven to get my coffee in the morning, and there's some serious blue collar workers, $100, $125.
Oh, totally.
and I'm too cheap to go for $5.
Well, or smart, what I mean? One of the two. No, it really is. It's a tax on the poor. There's no other way you can get money out of the poor like that. Because they're the only ones that are playing it. Wealthy people don't play the lottery. It's hilarious, Yeah, a dollar and a dream. And it's all going for education. Yeah, okay, whatever. Please spare me, this speech. Ugh, it's craziness. Anyway, so
what's going on at Allure? Allure is, in our conversations, has been more of a summer destination or boating season destination.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we always open, in my humble opinion, a little too early, but you kind of have to do that because you want to keep people working. You can't leave them laying around too long because otherwise they find other things to do. So we always open usually like around Paddy's Day, between Paddy's Day and the end of March.
Really?
Yeah, and it gives us a little chance to practice a little bit, And, of course, I have to lose money. I mean, that's what I do, what I mean? So we have to lose a little money before we make it,
So tease us. What is the menu like at Allure?
Menu's kind of like, it's mostly seafood, obviously, because I'm on the water.
So what would some appetizers be?
Oh, I mean, we shrimp tacos. We got, the mussels and the red curry. We have, there's a plancha grilled calamari with like a chimichurri on it. It's always kind of fun. And, of course, you have the requisite oyster bar. You have the raw bar there. There's a shrimp cocktail. There's clams on a half shell, oysters on a half shell. Cold lobster, if you want it. And it's, we have lobster steam lobsters from 1 to 3 pounds. And it's funny, I have a little soliloquy that I wrote on the menu about the lobsters. And I'm paraphrasing now, but the reason I wrote is I really think that when you're sitting in the summer and you order a lobster and you're looking at the water, the only way to really have it is steamed, It's, and people, can I get it grilled? Can I get it stuffed? How about Thermidor? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you just eat it steamed?
Well, that's very interesting you say that. Growing up, I don't know why, and I wasn't sitting outside at looking out at the water, as you said, but I guess I was bred to have a stuffed lobster,
mm-hmm.
which was, I guess, broiled and whatever.
Yeah, baked.
Baked. Yet in today's world, I guess I've matured. 9 out of 10 times, I'm getting a steamed or not stuffed lobster.
Well, I think cooking and eating has evolved tremendously since you were a child back in the Lincoln administration. You know, but and it's true because, you know, I mean, I remember as a kid going out and or even as a kid working in restaurants that, you know, the stuffed lobsters were always on the menu. You take out the tamale there and you'd stick a whole bunch of bready stuff in there. Some people had more seafood than others, whatever. And then you had things like lobster thermidor, which was this old holdover from the French Guard in the city, you know. And there was a couple of preparations like that. They would take the lobster out, chop the meat up, put it back in with some kind of glaze and brown it, whatever. But I think that for me, lobster especially, the more you screw with it, the worse it gets, you know, generally speaking. So I think that I have so much respect for the creature that I just think that, you know, having a pure lobster just the way it is with a little butter and lemon is the way to go. And so we don't do that other stuff, you know.
The only thing you have done, and I know it was a jewel, is you did something with crushed pepper flakes or something. It had a little bit of a bite to it. Did you steam it?
We steamed it. We used to put a little bit of Old Bay seasoning in the water, you know. But that's it. And you know, the thing with... Again, I mean, I think that part of the lobster eating experience is the cracking and the picking and the, you know, it's a whole thing, you know, it's not just, and I get, you know, you go to a good restaurant and you got a lot of nice clothes on and stuff, you know, we do lobsters out of the shell and I'll do a butter poached with a sauce, this, that, and the other thing, and that's fine, but I think that you go to the water, man, you know, you want lobster, get into it, you know, you're not dressed to the nines, you know, put a bib on if you have to, I think you look ridiculous, but that's me, you know, and then get into it, get the claws and crack it in.
To me, the best is to get not a crazy big lobster because I could be wrong, but they say that they get a little dry or not as tasty, the bigger ones.
Well, I think that there's some urban myth to that and a little bit of wives' tale mixed in. I think the problem is with bigger lobsters is they have to be cooked in two stages. The claws are usually way bigger than the tail. So if you put the whole lobster in, let's say, the water or whatever, a steamer, by the time the claws are done, the tail's overdone.
Oh.
So what we do with the bigger lobsters, we take the claws off, we start them ahead of time, and then do the tail later. And then you'll find that they're fine. You know,
what I love to do, though, is when gathered with a bunch of friends or whatever in the good old days, is to get a nice-sized lobster and whack it up, you know, just...
Yeah, it's half the fun, and, you know...
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun watching who gets the tail and who takes this. It's an experience, and I love it. But, like, to me, the perfect dinner is going to, like, a Ruth Chris or a Palm and, you know, getting a nice... I'm not a big steak guy, but getting a nice steak, whack up the lobster.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing better.
I remember taking my daughter to... we were up in Bayville, and I can't remember the name of the place. It was...
Steve's Pier 1?
No, it wasn't Steve's. It was across the street and down the block a little... it'll come to me in a minute. But I'm going back, you know, 30 years ago at this point. Anyway, I was teaching her how to crack a lobster. She was about 6 years old, you know. So I said, just press hard, press really hard, squeeze. Pop, the thing goes. And a piece of shell, maybe about an inch square, went at about... the trajectory was perfect. It looked like a nine iron into the green. It went all, just across to the next table and into this woman's hair, who she was about 80 years old, and she had one of them 80-year-old hairdos that was all lacquered up, you know, and it stuck in there, and she never felt it go in. I mean, we couldn't finish the rest of the meal because I kept looking over there. We were crying, laughing. It was just great.
I'll bet you. Uh-huh. I'm at a Broadway show. People might remember there used to be times you go into the city and sit in a theater and watch a live performance. But
not anymore.
So I'm sitting in front of, in back of somebody chewing some gum, and I sneeze.
Oh.
And the gum goes into the back of this girl's head. Yeah. And I'm going, I hope she doesn't realize. And sure enough, the hand goes back, and she takes it, and she looks at me. I there was nowhere to crawl.
Oh, yeah. No, well, I'll go one better than that. You ready? Now we're in this is two out of three falls, okay?
Like
the WWF. Okay. This is 35, 40 years ago. I'm in the subway, and I'm downtown, and there's this guy who they used to call hobos or bums, you know. Now he's homeless and, you know, probably... anyway, so he's picking his nose. And he's up to, like, the second knuckle, you know. And I'm watching, and I'm kind of laughing. And he scores one, and he brings it out, you know. And he's rolling it around on his hands. And he flicks it up in the air, and it lands on my pants. So I'm looking at this thing. I'm like, you can't be serious, right? So I get up. I walk over across the way. I said, is this belong to you? He goes, what? I said, get it off. He goes, well, you're crazy. Oh, you have no idea how crazy I am. Get it off. You're going to see crazy, dude. He picked it off and threw it down. I went back to my seat.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
Tom.
Well, it is what it is. You know, I got a couple of those. Oh, God. Anyway, so now that we've got the booger stories out of the way and all that stuff.
So we know what you have is an appetizer at a war.
Right.
And then what might be some of the signature dishes?
Well, Jeff the Chef, who's my chef out there, wonderful guy, has this signature thing that he does with, and it sounds simple, but it's a little more complicated than that. He does, and it's the signature dish of the place. It's the one that if we removed it, there'd be a complete riot, you know. And it doesn't sound, the disparate parts don't sound like they work together, but they do. He does this really nice sautéed flounder on top of sweet potatoes, of all things, with like a key lime beurre blanc and some usually green beans or whatever. And it sounds like it's all off, you know? I mean, if the first time I looked at it, I went, you can't be serious. I mean, this can't possibly work. And it does.
And how is the fluke prepared?
It's sautéed. Yeah. It is sautéed fluke with this sweet potato mash and this key lime beurre blanc. And it's brilliant, you know? So we have that. We have fish and chips on there. You know, there's some scallops. Usually there's a whole section. There's like 8 or 10, you know, prepared things like that that have different sauces and stuff. And then there's a whole section of just simply grilled if you're one of those people. You don't have to torture the waitress, you know, tell them, I can't have this, I can't have that. You just take a simply grilled, like, say, piece of swordfish. And it usually comes with a little virgin olive oil, lemon, and a vegetable or whatever.
So, as I had said, I was down in Florida last week, and I learned the lesson. Don't pick a restaurant necessarily by the fact that they can accommodate you.
I would concur with that, yeah. That's the Groucho Marx thing. Why would I want to be a member of a club that would have me?
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, there was 11 of us, and we wanted to be seated properly. Could we sit outside or whatever? Mm. And the couple of places... Well, actually, first we were going for the food truck event at my friend's development. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be over at 8 o'clock. Well, 7:15, they were out of food already. So we couldn't go there.
Not good.
So then we started figuring out, you know, where we can go. Can we go to JoJo's? Can we go there? They decided to go to Casa Tequila.
That's your first indication that you're making a mistake.
It was a mistake because everything had a heavy dose of lime, just overdone. It was just wrong.
Yeah.
and I wanted something simple. I'm trying to be safe, and I ordered something, a piece of salmon. I couldn't win. It was terrible.
Really? Yeah. You know, I put 5 pounds back on in the last, I guess, 3 months or so, because I haven't been paying as much attention to, you know, working out as I normally do. And now I'm very careful. Whatever I eat has to be worth the calories. I'm not going to go waste the calories. It's not even a money thing or a cuisine thing. It's just I'm not wasting the calories on stuff. So, you know, I have this rotation of, you know, 8 or 10 restaurants that I frequent all the time. And then, you know, if I get a new one that's interesting, I'll go. I went to one called Grotto de Greco or Grotto de something in Long Beach, which was really good, you know. And, there's so much, I think, and this is going to sound arrogant. I don't mean it that way, but there's so much mediocre restaurants out there, and they don't really charge much less than the better ones do, you know? And so I think that, you know, if you got to research them out a little bit, and it's trial and error, but you find them, and that's why you go, that's why you become regular at certain places, you know? And isn't every chair, I mean, it's fine. Those people will survive because there's a clientele that wants that, and, you know, they're happy with it or whatever, you know? But I just, I don't want to waste calories anymore. I'm getting too close to the end here to go screwing around, you know?
Again, it was just like every which way I went on my plate to try to find something that was, that I could...
Edible.
Edible, and it just didn't work. I mean, anything from... You know, go-to things like guacamole, it just had too much lime in it. I mean, and I'm the most passive. I can eat anything. I literally couldn't eat anything. It's just...
Yeah, no, it's...
They made a good margarita, but...
Did I ever tell you about the chef's signature dish and the pocketbook?
No.
Years ago, I went to a restaurant, which, it's not important which one it is. and I get recognized in places. It's probably the white hair or whatever, you know. So, you know, in restaurant circles, people know who I am, and you know, I'll go in and they'll say hello, or whatever. And a lot of times, somebody wants to send you out something. They'll buy you a drink, or, and it's very nice. It's a complimentary dessert, or you know, it's kind of a thing in the business, mm-hmm. right? So the waiter comes up to our table, and he says to me, "Hi, Mr. Shuttle. How are you? I'm good. How are you? Okay. I was just talking to the chef, and he wants to send you out his signature dish." And what am I supposed to say? Don't send it out? All right, you know. So long story short, I get to the signature dish. It comes out. It's on a plate that looked like a small soccer field. The plate was about 15 inches by 15 inches. It was like a tray almost, you know. It wasn't a plate. And he had all these scallops, you know, these big U10 scallops, but they were cut in half horizontally and kind of leaning. The top was leaning on the other one. It was over-seared. And there was like, I don't know, maybe 12 of them around there where, you know, three would have been fine. And it was on this burnt tomato sauce with this thatch of fried leeks that were incinerated to the point of unrecognizability in the middle, right? Here's the signature dish. Compliments of the chef. Thanks a lot, right? So he puts it down. So at the time, I'm going back 25 years ago, right? So I said to my girlfriend, I said, I can't eat this. She goes, well, what are we going to do? I said, I don't know, you know? So usually it's like, my sister's having the baby, you know, and we run, you know? And so I'm looking, I'm like, how much did you pay for the pocketbook? And she goes, you can't be serious. I said, I'm dead serious. How much did you pay for the pocketbook? She said, I don't remember. I said, well, I'll replace it. Take everything of value out of the pocketbook, right? So she takes a wallet out, you know, lipstick, you know, eyeliner, whatever. I'm stuffing my pocket. She's got it hers. We somehow clandestinely get the scallops and some of the sauce and some of the leeks into the pocketbook. And then it's, my sister's having a baby. We got to go, right? Check, please. So we walk out of there, dripping tomato sauce out of the pocketbook, you know, like Hansel and Gretel, you know, on the way out the door, right?
That's very funny.
And you're buying me a new one, you know, when we get to the parking
That's
lot.
That's so funny. There, okay. There was a book back in the day called Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman. And it used to talk about all these stupid things. And, like, he'd go into a buffet restaurant with, like, the pockets lined with plastic
yeah,
bags.
Yeah. Cookie stick bump, you know. Yeah. Well, there was another one. I'll tell you another quick story. There was a place that was right between where I was working and where I was living at the time, right? So I used to stop there periodically, you know, for a glass of wine or whatever, 7. And the chef he started sending me out, and again, it's out of the goodness of his heart, and I don't mean to sound ungrateful or anything, but, you know, I was ungrateful. So he sent out these duck wontons, right?
Duck
wontons. Yeah, they were wontons filled with duck, and they had some kind of a dipping sauce. I didn't like them. They weren't terrible, but I just didn't like them, whatever. So he says, you know, how are your wontons? I said, they were fabulous. This is what I get for lying, right? If I would have said they were terrible, I wouldn't have gotten.
Don't tell me this is the one with the floater.
Yeah. Should I finish?
Yes, please.
So he sends me out the duck wontons. I eat them out of obligation because I'm trying to be a nice guy. He comes out, how are the wontons? They were fabulous. Yeah, I knew you'd like them. That's why I sent you. Okay, appreciate it. Yeah, I have 3 glasses of wine. I'm out of there. I go back in the next time. He sends me the wontons. Jesus, here we go again, right? I eat the wontons. How are the wontons? Wontons were phenomenal. Thank you. You know what I mean? So the third time I'm in, he sends me the wontons. I can't eat them. You know, I had it with the wontons. So I palm them, and I go into the men's room. And I flush the wontons, right? I come back out. I'm proud of myself. I got the wontons. I can still tell them they were wonderful. There's none left. He goes in the bathroom right after me, comes out. He says, you flushed my wontons. Apparently, they had some baking soda in them because I caught a floater. Right? So one went in a hole, and the other one came back up. He goes, and what are the chances? I mean, we're on the same peeing schedule, you know what I mean, kind of thing. I was full. I didn't want to insult you. I'm sorry. He says, if you didn't like them, you should. No, I do like them. Next time I go, what do I get? Duck wontons. You know? I had to stop going in. It's terrible, you know. It's not easy, you know. It's not easy
not
being
easy
in a restaurant business.
Sure,
no, it isn't. It has its moments, but I'm telling you. So anyway, exciting news. Guess what I saw? Drum roll.
What did you see?
The season's first soft shell crab.
I did. Erica Marcus commented on somebody's post in on Facebook.
They're out already. Usually it's, you know, it started, I never seen them until April or May. And the last couple of years, they were end of March, I would see them. It's the end of February. It's like, you know, 60 days earlier than they should be out there. But they're coming up from Florida. And they're still very expensive, obviously. But listen, I like to be the first one. I mean, they're going to be on my opening menus at the club next week, you know, so... And probably at Allure, if I can get them out there. But that's
really?
Oh, I love, you know, soft shell crabs to me is, you know, the universe's gift to us all. They're just
Here's a, I don't even know what this is, Tri-State Restaurant Club.
Oh, geez.
Attention, soft shell crab lovers. You'll be happy to know the season has officially begun.
Officially.
Aside from one other area restaurant, Gray Bar Fish is the only local fishmonger with your first taste of soft shell crabs. Do not delay if you want in on these beauties from Florida.
And guess who Gray Bar Fish's first customer ever on Long Island was?
Must be you.
You do a radio show with him every week. Yes,
there you go.
It was me. Yeah, Bart and I have been friends for a long, long time. He's been servicing me since, I think he started in 90, I want to say 91 or 2.
Really?
So, yeah, we've been doing business forever.
So the one of the first ones to comment on it was Erica Marcus, wanting to know what size and...
Yeah, Tri-State Restaurant Group, I have a love-hate relationship with. I mean, it's a bunch of 1,000-something people who talk about restaurants, but most of it is complaining. I mean, to the point where even the owner of the site had to say, will you people knock it off, please, and just stop? I mean, it's just all moaning and whining and complaining. It's awful to read. It's just terrible to read. You know, restaurants, if you don't like them, don't go. You know, that's all.
I did actually, I'm not on Facebook that much, but I've been actually finding people just asking for a lot of recommendations, not a lot of review type stuff. I guess actually you would like it because... It's not negative. It's mostly been positive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But people saying, you know, where can I go to want to take my wife out for anniversary
sure.
or this, that, or the other. But
yeah.
not a lot of negativity, which is nice.
Because, what site is that?
A Tri-State Restaurant.
Oh, that's the Tri. Yeah, because they've been known forever as the you know the kvetching club. You know what I mean? And to the point where the owner's been kind of. You know, throwing people off and saying knock it off and trying to get everybody to behave, you know. And there's nothing worse than somebody who really thinks they know something about restaurants, you know, pontificating about what he doesn't know about restaurants. And it they're painful reads because, you know, there's a difference between pros and amateurs. And it's the same with restaurant reviews, you know. Reviewers are responsible. These people aren't, you know. And again, it's the anonymity just allows for so much shenanigans, you know, about... You know, it could be a, you know, it might not have been a customer. It could have been a, you know, a competitor. It could have been a disgruntled employee. You know, on the other hand, if it was a good review, it could have been my mother. You know what I mean? It could have been my friend Stu, you know.
Well, there's something to be said about what you were saying. I mean, every so often I'll be with a group of people, be it at a restaurant, be it at a retail store, and they say, you know, if you have a good experience, it's common courtesy in today's world to write a review. But unless you're a habitual review person, your review doesn't populate. So you have to be somebody that, like, is incessantly reviewing everything. And I don't have time. It's just like I find it amazing that some people have so much time to be on Facebook. Like somebody, a family member, posted the other day, like, shopping at BJ's.
I know, having a coffee, you know.
Well, you know.
Who cares?
Who cares?
I know. It's become a substitute for friendship or something. It's the weirdest thing. You know, I have 5,000 Facebook friends. I think I know 12 of them, you know. You know, use it for business or whatever, you know, and I get that part of it. But the rest of it, that whole chatting back and forth. I have two friends of mine. They've known each other for 50 years, 60 years. We've all been friends. They were on opposite sides of the Trump-Biden argument. I mean, the vitriol going back and forth between the two of them. I said, do you two realize you're being manipulated here? I mean, you know, you're going to let 50 years of friendship go out of, you know, whack because of this. This is insane what you're doing. You know, we used to be able to have discourse, you know, and debate and, you know, and civil conversations about our disagreements. Now it's like, you know, the guy that's living across the street from you for 20 years is suddenly the enemy because he has a different yard sign than you have. It's just nuts, you know. I don't know. How did we get here, you know?
So soft.
It's easy for you to say.
Soft. Shell crabs.
Yeah. So how do you prepare them? Two more times, really fast. Go ahead.
I doubt soft it. Shell crabs.
That was one.
How many times did I say?
Two.
Two.
In a row.
Soft shell crabs. Soft shell crabs. I had a trouble. Yeah. So how? What's the easiest way of preparing them?
Go to a restaurant and order them. It's the easiest way to get them. But short of that, best way to do it.
So I'm going to the restaurant. How? What? How should I expect them to be prepared?
Most times they're fried, you know, I would say.
I have had them in an Asian restaurant also, but that was like, yeah. You know, in soft shell crab and lobster sauce.
I know. You know, and you know, the sad part about the Asian restaurants is they serve them in November, you know, when they're not around. So most of that stuff is frozen, you know, in off season. But, you know, that being what it may, I would say probably 70% of restaurants serve them fried in some variation or another. The other way is sautéed. You can grill them. I just don't think they really, you know, say grilled crab doesn't really get me, you know. Sautéed is, I think, one of the nicer ways because it's not as much fat, you know, like you would if you fried them.
So what, do you put them in an egg batter or something with crumbs?
Yeah, you can do that. You can batter them with egg and, you know, fry them that way, like almost like a, what they call a franchise or a, you know, like a piccata would be. A lot of times they'll just bread them and put them in a fryer later, you know. You know, generally, if I fry them, I soak them in buttermilk, and I just hit them with a little bit of rice flour because it's lighter, and then deep fry them really quickly, and then I'll put them. I like them that way a lot. You know, I don't think they're all that. You know, some people get freaked out about the fried thing. You know, I don't know. I think, you know, if you're doing that stuff in moderation, you're fine, you know.
Well, that's well said. You know, in general, life in moderation is a key to success.
Except for Pinot Noir.
Except for Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir is the only thing that you can eat or drink in copious amounts, and it gets better and better for you. That's my wisdom on it.
Wow.
That's the last word
you
on Pinot Noir.
With you.
No, there's no argument. There's absolutely no argument there. But everything else, like you say, you know, if you moderate, you should be fine. I mean, you know, it's like, last I heard, none of us are getting out of this alive. So we should probably just, you know, pay as close attention as you can. You want to extend this as far as you can, obviously, in a healthful manner. But, you know, to freak out about, you know, a soft shell crab that happened to be dipped in oil, what's the big deal? I mean, you know, just eat it and shut up, you know, like my father used to say. Shut up and eat it.
So do you have to clean them at all?
Yeah, yeah. There's it's a simple way. If you turn the crab over, there's what they call an apron on them. And the apron is like this semicircle around the rear end of it, not where the eyes are, the other side. And if it has a pointy extruding part off it, that's the male. If it's a wider one, it's a female. That's how you can tell it, too. That tab has to come off, so you just pull that off.
But if I go to the fish market, will he clean it for
me? Yeah, they'll totally clean it for you. But they're not hard. I mean, you just pull that tab off, and then you lift either side where the point is, on the left and the right side. Just lift that part up, and you'll see this spongy. It looks like almost like a bent triangle of spongy material there. That's the gills. And you pull those out on either side. And then you just clip the face off, you know, the eyes and the mouth. And then you're done. That's it, you know. It can be a little, you know, if you're squeamish about such things, I guess it can be a little weird. But if you, like you say, you go to, you know, the fish market, like Graybar. Graybar is over in Copeg now. He moved from Westbury. But they'll do it for you. They'll clean it for you. And you go to a regular fish store, a retail fish store, they'll clean it for you also. And then you got them, I mean, but then you got to cook them kind of quickly after that because, you know, they're at that point they're dead and, you know, you don't want them to sit around too long. So, you know, we don't really clean them until right before we're ready to cook them. But the bottom line is they're just fabulous. It's that.
What do you serve them with?
My favorite prep is, you know, I see crabs as a summertime thing. So I usually do them on a bed of sautéed corn or some kind of a corn succotash. Sometimes I use fava beans in there. Corn with a basil broth. So I'll make a basil broth out of pureed basil, a little bit of just stock and cream.
I have to check in with you on something. So again, down in Florida, we're having some people over for dinner. we had some chicken that we grilled up, and I bought some shrimp and some scallops. The woman at the fish store said, "You got to try these shrimp. They're cooked and frozen, but they got a shell on them. But they taste like lagostinos or whatever. You're gonna really enjoy it." She goes, "What?" Because this was like the day after Valentine's Day. She goes, "You'll score extra points with the little ladies."
Oh, boy.
So I bring them home. The other couple get there. And, there's shells on these shrimp. They're supposed to be. You're supposed to grill them and then just pull it off.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? She had the husband march into the kitchen, take the bowl of shrimp that I was going to throw on the grill, and start dissecting them. Was I, like, improper?
No. And he probably scored some points with the other lady, like the girlfriend, you know? Forget that. That's like, I mean, you know, what's funny about all of this stuff is, like, you know, fish cooked on the bone is usually a little better. There's some flavor in the bones, you know, obviously. Shrimp cooked in a shell is going to be a little more flavor because there's flavor in the shell. But people are used to the convenience of not having it, you know. I don't, you know, it's, what's the big deal? Just peel it, you know.
I don't know. She said it was going to be wonderful.
Well, it probably was, but, you know, if you got to consider the audience, you know. I mean, if the audience isn't receptive, that's why the guy who had to march back into the kitchen was probably thinking, "I can't wait to get to my girlfriend's apartment because she's such a pain in my rear end." You know?
I don't know. I didn't really. I'm sorry that I didn't pay attention to what he ended up doing, but essentially all he did was take off the shell. I mean, it was already cleaned. There was no head on it.
I can't tell you how many times I have whole fish on a menu. Let me once again explain what whole fish means. Whole fish means the whole fish, you know. Doesn't mean the head's off. It doesn't mean the tail's off. It doesn't mean filleted at the table. It means the whole fish. If you don't want a whole fish, you should probably not order a whole fish, you know. Why order something that you can eat when you can order something you can't eat? Torture everybody.
You've talked about this before. Somebody was telling me that they had at a nice restaurant, Branzino, but it was cooked in a salt cask.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I know you've spoken about that before.
Yeah, you mix salt with egg whites, and then you slather that all over the fish, and then it's baked in the salt. There's a couple of schools of thought on it. I mean, I've had it. It's good, you know. It's a way of keeping the steam in, you know, which kind of cooks the fish and doesn't allow flavor to get out. And it hardens up like a rock, you know. So when it comes to the table, you got to bang it with a mallet. The only problem is it gets a little messy. This gets salt everywhere or whatever, you know. So you got to kind of clean it, brush it up real good or whatever. But it's just, you know, it's like in papillote. There's this French thing called en papillote, which means in a paper.
Well, that's interesting you mention that.
I think it's a cleaner way of doing it, you know.
At London Lenny's, I would get monkfish cooked in a paper bag.
Yeah, yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's very good. Because, again, the steam stays inside. So, there's, you know, when you cook, for the people who've never had it before, what we do is we take a piece of parchment paper and lay it out. It's a pretty fairly big-sized parchment paper. You lay the fish fillet in there with whatever aromatics, herbs, white wine, butter. You know, let's say I'll use like fresh thyme and or basil. Maybe I'll put some tomatoes in there, some zucchini in there, some onions in there, a bunch of butter in there, some white wine, and then I fold it over and then seal the ends all the way around. So it's in this sealed paper bag. And so we'll put that in the oven and bake it. And what happens is the steam from the wine will blow the bag up. So it comes out like puffed up. And when it goes to the table, when you cut the bag open, you get that fish facial, you know, which is kind of nice. You know, you get all the aromatics, the smell, this, that, and the other thing, and all the flavors in there. And it's kind of a fun way to do it, you know. It's less dramatic than the salt thing, but it's way easier. The salt thing's a pain in the neck, you know. You gotta use a lot of salt, A and B. It's all over the place and, you know, whatever. But it's you know, you get it to the table and you crack it with the hammer, and it's kind of a ceremonial thing, which is nice, you know. Reminds me of, like, the... You know, between the 40s and the middle 60s, when they were still doing tableside cooking and service, I kind of miss some of that, you know?
I do, too.
I mean, there's something to be said to bringing some of that back.
Because you were talking about something earlier today, and it brought my mind to Caesar salad prepared fresh at the table.
Yeah, it used to be all the time. I mean, I worked for this guy, Hugo, up in Connecticut, and he was such... character and a half. I mean, I could talk for an hour about Hugo, but what he used to do was his Caesar salad was so precise that at the end, when he finally doled it out and there was none left, he used to hold the bowl over his head. So to show people that there was no dressing dripping out, that he just had the right amount, you know?
The other thing my mind goes to is like Crepe Suzette.
Yeah.
Cooked at the table.
Sure, Crepe Suzette, Cherry's Jubilee, you know, Bananas Flambé. Duck was carved at the table, and duck a la press. They had the press. They used to press the bones out and make the sauce.
Really?
Sure. Chateaubriand was carved at the table. Baked Alaska used to get flamed at the table. There was a lot. I mean, I was the last generation of guys to come up through that era, you know, so I saw all of that stuff, you know, and did it. I used to cook in the dining room occasionally. And it can be a lot of fun, but it can also be a pain in the rear end because if you get, you know, 17 orders of Crepe Suzette and it's like, oh, man, here we go, you know, at the half the room's in flames, you know what I mean? It's like, but now you get, you know, the lawyers won't let you do it. I mean, now, you know, if the fire department comes in and sees you doing it, forget it. I mean, it's all kinds of trouble, you know. So now we're under, you know, we're under so much regulation. I was sitting in Amano the other night, you know, having dinner at the bar. And this is, I think we counted, this is the 12th time that the SLA has been in checking for masks.
I'm glad you said you were having dinner, because if you were having a chicken, a wing,
yeah,
you probably would have been arrested.
You can't have any fire in there. But, you know, it's just, it's annoying to me because now it's become, it's not a safety issue as much as a revenue generating device, I think, for the state at this point, you know. Because, you know, all right, check me once, check me twice, check me three times. After the third time, you probably should be pretty much aware that we're paying attention and we're doing the right thing. 12 times?
I think, though, not to butt heads with you, I think there are some people that just don't pay attention, though. I guess there was a couple of restaurants recently that had their licenses rescinded again,
yeah,
including Toku,
yeah,
which I guess is one of the Pohl Brothers places.
It is. You know, the thing is, though, I mean, you know, it's hard to police everybody in a place the size of Toku. You know, I mean, you could be a manager on the floor in the back attending to a table. Somebody could be sitting at the bar in the front taking his mask off and talking to somebody. How do you know? I mean, you know, it's just, this isn't an exact science here. I mean, you know, it's...
No, we've talked about it again before. You know, now that they're opening public facilities... you know, there's no rule about between chewing your French fry and putting your mask back on. You know, it's got to be common courtesy or whatever. But again, there's always going to be obnoxious people and
totally
uncaring, what ignorant people, because apparently, even though a portion of the population is getting vaccinated, it doesn't mean you're Superman all of a sudden. But at the same time, I don't understand. I took my mom to the doctor the other day, and she's busy telling me about double masking. And I go, the only time I wore a double mask is when I went on the airplane.
Yeah.
But during the regular day, she goes, oh, no, you're supposed to double mask now.
Well, that was Fauci. You know, I don't know. Why don't we wear nine? You know, if two's good, nine's got to be great, right?
I don't get it.
Let's wear 12 masks. You know, here's the thing. I had to go, we ran out of something the other day when I was at Amano making whatever I was making. I can't remember what it was. So I had to run down to a supermarket, right? So I go in, and normally I have a mask in my pocket, right? It was warm yesterday. I didn't have my jacket on. I'm tooling around ShopRite, and it wasn't until I got to the register where I went, and ladies looking at me, I said, I'm so sorry, I forgot it. She goes, okay. I said, can you watch my stuff? I'll be right back. Yeah, yeah, fine. You know, if SLA was in there at that point, they lose, what, $10,000 for
No,
that?
No, the similar thing happened to me. I mean, I left it in the car. I didn't realize it. I didn't get quite as far as you did. But, oh, my God, and it was pouring. I had to run back to the car, get my mask or whatever.
I can't tell you how many times I've gotten up to go to the men's room in a restaurant and got halfway there and ran back for the mask. I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm not thumbing my nose at the authorities. It's just one of those things. Now, if a guy's in there, I'll tell you another story. I know of a guy. I won't tell you where it's from, but this is a drop-dead verified story. The Board of Health and the SLA were going into his place on a regular basis checking for masks, right? And it was some kind of, I guess he got a little pissy with them or whatever, you know. And the guy came in, and the owner was back there behind the bar doing something. He had the mask on, and the guy said something, and the owner responded, and the guy said, I didn't hear you. What'd you say? The owner responded again. The guy said, I didn't hear you. What did you say? And he put his mask down, said what he said, and the owner says, you don't have a mask on, and wrote him up. So, you know, this is, you know, rules that can be abused and, you know, everything else. I just...
See, but you just said something that's very interesting, because I get very upset when I see people with their mask below their nose.
Yeah.
And there's some people that purposely do that, but apparently a lot of the so-called blue masks, when you're talking, they drop down. And I've watched people, you know, have it up and it drops.
No, it doesn't happen to me.
It's... Again, not everything is intentional.
Right.
And then I don't understand this thing. It's very hard to hear people through the mask.
It is.
You know.
It's hard to see them when you're talking to them because your glasses fog up.
I'm at BJ's and I have to talk to somebody at the counter. And I'm talking to you. I can't hear you.
Yeah. That's it. Then you take your mask off and then somebody arrests you. It's like. It's become, I don't know where the United States has gone off the rails somewhere. We've turned into the Soviet Union. You have tattletale hotlines where they're telling on their neighbors and stuff. This guy's not.
Oh, that's funny, too. I was with a repairman today, and we're talking about the summer and concerts or whatever. And he goes, the vaccine passport is going to be what salvation is. And he goes, it's going to be like Hitler's Germany, that everybody's going to have an emblem, you know, who has, or a tattoo that you've been vaccinated. And
It's frightening. It really is. It's just the whole thing.
And
is
then
just...
they're talking about, I could have sworn I woke up Monday morning and they're talking about the vaccine might be only good for 30 days or 60 days. Or, they don't know.
They don't want to lose.
And
wanna...
then this guy tells me today that the Johnson & Johnson one is going to be good for a full year, one shot for a full year. So what about the people that got the Pfizer one, they got the Moderna one, they got the AstraZeneca one that's going to come out?
Yeah.
There's no rhyme or reason.
I don't think these politicians are willing to give up these new powers that they've acquired so easily.
No, they're not.
And I think they're gonna come up with all kinds of reasons to keep you under their thumb, because that's the ultimate goal, I think, of most of this stuff. Obviously, there's a disease out there and it has to be controlled, but 98% of everybody who isn't compromised is surviving this thing. But if that's the case, why?
Well, that's another thing. Then I get into discussions with people that are not going to get vaccinated, and they say there's a 80%, 60% chance of overcoming the disease, so they don't need to get vaccinated.
Well, you know, there's a strong point to that. If all of this stuff is real. I mean, I have a kid at work and said to me, we'd never take the vaccine and that done. Government conspiracy, and they're going to shoot a chip into my body and they're going to know where I am. I'm like, well, that's going to, it'll be hard to get that through the hypodermic needle, but, you know, whatever. And he says, you're not worried about it. I said, dude, I was 16 years old in 1969. I put things in my body they haven't even identified yet. You know what I mean? No, I'm not worried about it, you know? And I don't think anybody should be, really. I mean, there's some people that have reactions to it. But for the most part, I'm sure they're safe. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing it on such a massive scale, you know? I mean, it's just, I'm exhausted with it all. You know, enough is enough already. It's time to open up the country. You know, you have all these experiments going on.
There's so many inconsistencies. Like, somebody sent me something. They showed a scene at an airport, and everything's social distance, you know, 6 feet apart.
Right.
And then you get on the airplane, and you're sitting on each other's lap.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, California's been locked down completely, and Florida isn't. And they have the same rates of recovery and sickness and everything else. So who's right? You know, I mean, all right, if it's going to make a big difference, lock everything down. But apparently it hasn't, you know. So why not open everything up? You know, it's just, you know, kids aren't in school. Kids aren't spreaders, you know. You know,
well,
follow the science.
I just watched something on the news last night. And they were talking about children's scholastic sports.
Right.
And apparently when the government shut down a lot of the different school-associated group sports, everything went private, and they were still having the sports. But they said that they would have a tournament or a showcase or whatever, and there'd be 100 cases of COVID. And what was bad about it was, it wasn't that it was just staying in the local area. Many of these were regional tournaments.
Yeah.
And then the people would go home
Sure.
and spread. So, again, there's just so many inconsistencies, and it's just a lot of frustration at the moment, even with the vaccination process, because here in New York, it's absolutely mad.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
You know, you can't get an appointment, and then you hear about them opening up a special vaccination center in Elmont. So you try to go there, but you don't live in Elmont. So, and people trying to get on at 12 o'clock at night to get on the Jones Beach one. And then everybody's calling each other. You know, you got a special number, and they get on, and it's the New York State Health Department. Oh, I thought you were giving me a special number so I can get, you know, like, I know Tom Shordell. I can get a table here.
Yeah, it's all insane. I mean, you know, I can't go to Portland, Maine, because you got to quarantine 3 days before, quarantine 4 days after. Meanwhile, they got a caravan of 1,000 people coming over the border of Mexico. Nobody's getting tested. It's nuts. You know, it's all mixed messages. Nobody knows. It's all political. It's whatever the agenda fits. That's what it is. It's not anything different. You know, if the politics works, you can come in without a quarantine. And if the politics don't work, you can't. If the politics work, I'm shutting down the restaurants in California statewide. If the politics work the other way, I'm opening up everything in Florida. It's just political. It has nothing to do with science.
Everything is political. Then I was watching something on TV about the immigration. How I guess the old administration had a different policy than what happens now.
Yeah.
So now you come in and you get tested, and then you get a ticket to appear in court as compared to the other people that were trying to do it the old way and can't do it the new way.
Well, you know, nobody ever shows up to the court dates. I mean, I've been dealing with these people forever. I mean, you know, I mean, our business wouldn't run without immigrants, you know. And what this government does, and it's by design. You know, it's not like these people are stupid. They're not stupid. Calculating, but not stupid. They make legal immigration impossible and illegal immigration easy. And all the stuff that happens that they're telling you that happens with illegal immigration is true. The coyotes charge a fortune. There's all kinds of shenanigans going on with drugs being smuggled in and children being smuggled in and rapes and all the other stuff that they tell you happens. I mean, I have first-person accounts of this stuff that I've seen over the last 50 years, you know. And nobody seems to care because one side wants cheap labor and the other side wants voters. And until that changes, you know, I mean, the Democrat side of the aisle has always been for as much immigration as they can because they believe that these people are going to vote Democrat at some point. If they thought these people were going to vote Republican, you would never see them advocating for it, you know. The other side is thinking, hey, I got businesses here. I need cheap labor. Let's get the cheap labor. So they're both guilty of it. You know, both sides are guilty of it. Two different ways of going about it and two different reasons, but it's the same thing, you know. And we do need a number of these people here because, they, you know, regardless of what is politically correct to say, there are Americans that will not take certain jobs. You know, the big lie is, you know, they always tell you the big lie, they're taking jobs away from American citizens, you know. And the politicians are going to say, how can you say that? But disparage Americans that way. But it's true. I haven't had an American dishwashing applicant in 35 years. You know what I mean? Is it a coincidence? Come on. You know what I mean? They're just picking, you know, oranges. Who's doing all the picking? The fruits and vegetables and stuff. I mean, it's always been immigrant labor, you know. And there's nothing wrong with it, you know, just, you know, give them a reason to get here, you know, let them pay some taxes, and then, you know, either they have to go home or they apply to stay and they come in the right way. You know, this whole flooding everybody over the border where you don't know where they came from, you don't know what the agenda is, you don't know what they have on them. It's just, you know, I used to laugh at Hillary Clinton when she was running for office and she was saying that, you know, like, Donald Trump wants to build a wall. That's ridiculous. We have all this technology. We build a smart wall. We can do it with, you know, lasers and this and that. This is coming from a woman who didn't know what was going on in the next room when she was in the White House. You know, she's going to take care of this. I mean, come on. This is insane.
I don't know. If I'm not mistaken, I heard they want to give illegal aliens the ability to get a driver's license.
Of course, yeah, and I can't hire them. This is the part that's so hysterical about this is they let them in, right? And then they give them driver's licenses because they want motor voter or whatever, right? But if I hire them, I get fined. It's like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Do you have any idea what you're doing? The answer is no. They don't. They don't. They just, you know, it's just bizarre. It's getting more and more bizarre by the week. Let's talk about food. I'm getting mad now.
Let's just talk about what's coming up in future weeks. And first of all, to correspond with us, it's fire at WHLI.com. You can email us at fire@WHLI.com. But coming up, we have Easter coming.
Yeah.
We have
Passover.
We have spring.
Paddy's Day.
St. Paddy's Day. So we have so much on the table to talk about in the next coming weeks.
We do. And, you know, I'm just the guy to do it. I have no problem talking about it. The only thing that's limiting is Paddy's Day, because if you look at, I can't tell you how many times I've been with a partner or a friend or whatever. What are you going to do for Paddy's Day? Corned beef and cabbage. Well, what else is on the Irish menu? Shepherd's pie. Well, what else are you going to do? I'm out of idea. That's it. What's going on in Ireland isn't that, you know, blatantly ethnic thing anymore. They're just cooking cool food over there now.
Oh, my God. That just, again, I have to detour. I was with some people, and they were talking about lamb chops. And they
don't
were talking
you bring
about
up the mint jelly.
Australian lamb.
Yeah, and New Zealand.
New Zealand. And, like, getting so opinionated about all this. One is, like, expensive and one is less expensive, and I'm not spending this much money, and don't you expect me to eat this and pay that? And I'm like, what the heck?
They're all good. They're all good.
Thank you.
The best, Colorado.
I think they were talking, really?
Yeah, yeah, Colorado lamb chops. They're much bigger. I like the taste better. The New Zealand and the Australian chops in New Zealand are smaller and less expensive.
So real quick, I go to the store. I get a package of Colorado lamb chops.
I don't know if they sell them in packages. You probably have to go to butcher for those. You know?
And what am I going to quickly do with them?
I would sear them. If you get chops, you're going to have to sear them. You know, sear them on the outside and finish them in the oven. You know, they'd probably take 8 or 9 minutes. And you
bake them? Or
375, 8 or 9 minutes, you know, after you brown them, you know. Or you can grill them if you have a grill outside and do the same thing, you know. I like roasting them. I like to get the whole rack roasted off and then slice it. I think it looks nicer, you know. Eats better. It's more tender generally. You can take it off the bone sometimes, roll it up. Sometimes I'll stuff it with spinach and goat cheese, roll it up, tie it, and then slice it, like, you know, and lay it out on some sauce or whatever. But, yeah, lamb, I think lamb is one of those underused things, you know. Years ago, I mean, my mother used to cook lamb every once in a while, and I don't know where she bought it. My mother never had any money, so I'm sure it was the cheapest lamb in the place. But it was as close to mutton as you could get, and it was really aromatic, you know, really kind of stinky, you know, and gamey, you know. Now they're just raised on, you know, feed that's just, you know, brings out the flavor of the lamb and not that offensive, you know, odorifice? I don't know if that's a word. I think it is. I think odorous. Maybe it's odorous. Maybe it's not. Maybe
aromatic.
Just stinky. Maybe.
Aromatic.
Aromatic says nice. You know, odorous says, no. Yeah, I'm trying to get in the
Stinky.
I'm getting in the stinky zone. Well, listen, speaking of stinky, it stinks. We got to leave. All right, so
it's just
been, we're just getting rolling
new
here.
The rhythm of it.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to end Tom's show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. Keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza, and hopefully we will see you next week.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.